Welcome to The Intuitive Customer, where we discuss how you can improve your customer experience and your bottom line. And now, here are your hosts, award-winning influencer and pioneering author of 7 books, Colin Shaw and Professor Ryan Hamilton from Emory University.
We have too much information to cope with. It's either beyond our ability or it's not worth our time and effort. And so out of all this information, what we tend to do is focus on something. It may be the information we consider to be the most important. It may just be the information that's easiest for us to get a hold of.
Is this what you want to anchor your customer on? Have you thought of the implications of anchoring your customer on this? So if you're saying something is $99 and it's going to end up being $500, there's a balance between attracting them and disappointing them. What were we talking about? I forgot what we were talking about.
Ironically, we were talking about the focusing effect, which is ironic because you completely lack the ability to focus, Colin.
So, Ryan, you know one of our favorite sayings? Do you know one of our favorite sayings on this show is?
I know several of which would not make it past the censors. So why don't you tell me what you're thinking?
One of the favorite things that we say is there's never one thing happening at any point. Yeah, there's multiple things happening.
The academic way of saying that is human behavior is causal dense, has a high causal density.
Yes. In fact, we did a show, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago on the fact that everybody looks for that silver bullet.
Yeah.
That one thing that they can do to change things, and that will change the world. What we know is that there isn't ever just one thing, and it's never going to be easy. What we've done in previous shows is we have taken the subject and we've taken a sort of a deep dive into that subject. And what I've recognized is that I think we need to embrace that bit about there's never one thing happening. And as you and I have been chatting, what we know is that there's a number of things happening all at the same time. So we've decided, dear listener, to do a masterclass, okay? Believe it or not, Ryan and I have got this bloody enormous spreadsheet that's got loads of heuristics and biases, and it's all written in academic language, okay?
We've done individual episodes on most of them.
And we have, and we've looked down it, but we've never taken a step back and gone, hold on, you know, there are 200 things here. How do they group together? And what's the implications of that, which is actually the key thing. So we've decided to do this, what we're calling a masterclass in unlocking the psychology of customer experience. So we're going to take a group of these heuristics and biases, and we're going to look at what they mean together as a group, as a bunch. This is going to go over about 8 different shows. You know, we'll theme these so you'll know what we're doing, but we're trying to group these together. So I hope that makes sense to everybody.
Yeah, there's a risk when you start studying this stuff, and I'm as prone to this as anybody else, where you kind of fixate on certain topics, certain theories, certain heuristics or biases, and you start to see that one thing everywhere. And you think that, oh, this is the explanation that I need. And to Colin's point, the goal is to have a more holistic understanding of psychology. And so the approach that we're going to take is to group together different bodies of theory or different classes of phenomena so that we can say, like, there's all these different things, but they all kind of like load in the same way. They're all kind of different manifestations of a larger principle. And we're hoping that if you can understand the larger principles better, then that'll make you maybe more nimble in trying to understand your customers.
As we've gone through this, then I also think that it's made me, as I've done this from a sort of a layman's perspective, I've gone, oh, right, yeah, so that's the reason why customers are like this, or that's the reason why I do this. I hope it becomes a bit more revealing for you as well.
You
Let's not assume, though, that people know what in the hell we mean by heuristic and biases.
That's not assuming that we know what the hell we mean by what we're talking about. Go on.
Well, I hope you do, mate, because you teach bloody people on this all the time.
You need to meet more teachers if that's what you think. But yeah, let's start with that assumption. Yeah.
What is a heuristic and a bias? Let's let the audience know what that is.
Good. I'm glad we're starting here. This is one of my favorite areas of psychology. A lot of my own research kind of grows out of this discipline, this way of thinking about things. The big idea here, the theme that we're going to tie together, is that people look for shortcuts for the cognitive work they need to do. So we don't always evaluate all the information that we have. We don't always like cross all the information we have against each other to make trade-offs. We tend to try to make judgments and to make decisions based on shortcuts whenever that is possible. And some clever scientist named Herbert Simon back in the 50s started using this word heuristic to describe that shortcut process. So we have these heuristics, and they're, you can think of them as rules of thumb or as cognitive shortcuts, but they're ways of getting around kind of doing a full, thorough assessment of what's in front of us and instead doing something fast and easy. Another psychologist likes to call them fast and frugal ways of doing things.
And the way I always think of it from a layman's perspective is just the rule of thumb. It's a rule of thumb that we automatically, and a lot of the time we don't even know that we're using it, but it's a rule of thumb that we deploy to make quick decisions.
Yep.
Which of these are we looking at first?
So there are a whole bunch of heuristics. In fact, there are some that you've developed for yourself that you're aware of. So you might, you know, when you're going grocery shopping, your rule of thumb might be to always buy the apples from the bottom of the bin, because you know that those have been touched less often by people, right? So that's your heuristic. You don't need to think about it. You're always going to do that every time you go. So there, we have lots and lots of these heuristics. Some of them are idiosyncratic to you, but there are three or four that have been really well studied and that seem to be true of most people most of the time and seem to represent something about how our brains work, our cognitive machinery operates, that is important. So we're going to briefly talk through the four of those, and then we'll talk about how they integrate and then what we can do with them. So the four we're going to talk about, the first one is anchoring and adjustment. And the idea here is that when we're making a judgment, let me use a concrete example. Suppose that I were to ask you to estimate the height of a tree. We walk outside and I say, look at that tree, Colin, how tall is that tree? You could do that. You could measure the length of the shadow of the tree and then use your basic trigonometry to figure out the angle of that shadow and then calculate. Oh, nobody's doing that.
I'm going to do that all the time, aren't I? Yeah.
Nobody's doing that. Instead, what we often do when we're making an estimate or a judgment like that is we anchor on something. We go like, oh, well, there's a two-story house that's kind of near to it. I know that two-story houses are, whatever, 30 feet high or so. That looks to be larger than that. So let's adjust from that anchor. And so we start with something that we know or we can generate quickly, and then we move from that and adjust next to it. So we use anchoring and adjustment all the time. If I ask you, you know, if you're interviewing for a job and the person says, well, what kind of salary are you looking for? You generally will anchor on some number and adjust from there. You might anchor on your current salary and adjust based on, you know, how much more you want to make this new job. It's a quick, easy way to come up to an estimate. The reason this is a problem, the reason heuristics are interesting in general, I should mention this up front, is because they often lead to biases, right? So they're good enough, these rules of thumb, these heuristics, they're pretty good, but they tend to be off systematically. And so two of the ways that the anchor and adjustment heuristic leads to errors or bias, we tend to choose bad anchors a lot of the time. So there's lots of research showing that just anything that's salient in our environment, we can latch onto that and use it as an anchor, even if it's sometimes irrelevant. And the other way it goes wrong is that we don't adjust enough. We tend to stay too close to the anchor that we start with. So that's anchoring and adjustment.
The example I always think is money, where you see an advert and it says it's $99. And then you think it's going to be $99. And what you haven't seen is it says in very small print, from $99. It's always the balance, isn't it? And we'll talk a bit more about this. The company has done well in getting your attention. The trouble is they've then potentially set themselves up for failure by, if it then costs you $500, you feel like you've been conned, basically.
Yeah, the way that companies have used this where it works well for them is, if you'll see, like, this used to be popular in late night infomercials where they'll show you some product that's usually novel. You don't really know how much that thing should cost. And they say, you might think something like this would cost you $99.
Yeah.
But no, it's only $22.95. If they had just come out and said this is $22.95, then that might feel like that seems like a lot for whatever that thing is. But if they start you with this anchor of 100 and then they move down from there, now this feels much better.
Just another quick one that I just sort of thought about is just deliveries. I've been surprised recently where I get on Amazon, something's delivered either the same day or the next day. And then I've been getting onto some other websites and ordering stuff. And suddenly it's like, yeah, we get this in 5 working days. And you're thinking, you're joking. I'm anchored on the Amazon delivery.
Good. Ready for the next one?
Yep.
Okay. So another heuristic that is very common is what's known as the focusing effect, or the focusing heuristic. The idea there is pretty simple. For a lot of the judgments and decisions that we make, we have too much information to cope with. There's too much. It's just, it's either beyond our ability or it's not worth our time and effort. And so out of all this information, what we tend to do is focus on something. We just select some subset of that information. It may be the information we consider to be the most important. It may just be the information that's easiest for us to get a hold of. And we focus in on that, and that's what we use to make our judgment, or that's what we use to make our decision. So pretty straightforward.
It's been interesting recently. We're having our kitchen replaced in the UK. And I have an exciting laugh, mate. I was buying radiators.
Do tell, Colin. Radiators, you say.
And I'm trying to work out, with the size of the room, how big a radiator I need. Yeah. So how many therms do I need to be this radiator?
I can't believe you passed up the opportunity to use BTUs in this context. That stands for British Thermal Units.
Yes.
And you didn't. You went straight for
thermal. I nearly said that. And then I thought to myself, I don't know. Do they use BTUs in the States?
I think that's the standard, I think, for a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Because it's just as a bit of a sidebar, I've always found it interesting that, did you know the American gallon is less than the imperial gallon? Gallon. I don't know if it's empirical or imperial. So the British gallon, let me call it that, is actually larger than the American gallon. Did you know that?
It feels like a really weird thing to brag about, Colin, but okay. All right.
Yeah. And apparently, according to my father, a ton is different as well. So anyway, side by side. What were we talking about? I forgot what we were talking about.
Ironically, we were talking about the focusing effect, which is ironic because you completely lack the ability to focus, Colin.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Yes, that's right. We were talking about focusing effect. Yeah. I just totally lost focus. Anyway. The point I was talking about with the focusing effect was, I was really focused on how many BTUs is this radiator going to do? And I didn't even know what a bloody BTU was before I started to look at it. And then they started to put, and this is again interesting, because then they started to put it in 3.51, and I'm thinking, oh gosh, they're now putting decimal points. Do I need to worry about decimal points in this? And anyway, but I was focused on that, and that was the thing that was occupying my time.
And that's, I mean, not a lot of us have bought radiators, but a lot of us have been in exactly that situation where you're buying some product you have very little experience with, and there's all this information, and what do you do with it? It's usually not worth the time and effort for us to fully educate ourselves about this arcane purchase. Instead, we focus on something that we think matters or that is easy to evaluate.
I'm laughing because it turns out these radiators, you can get them in different colors. And the thing that Lorraine was focused on was, what color were we getting? I'm there in the weeds talking about BTUs, and she's going, I think that cream one looks quite nice.
I mean, so part of the focusing effect can be influenced by the ease with which stuff is evaluated and design choices. Like, I mean, Apple products tend to be very easy to use. They also tend to be very well designed and stylish. And I'm convinced that there's a non-trivial portion of Apple's customer base that chooses them based on design, which is a kind of focusing effect. We're ignoring a lot of other stuff to focus in on what it looks like.
It's a really important point, actually, because now I just think of it. I mean, it's a point I was going to make later, but I think I'll make it now. Although I just joked about the fact that Lorraine was focusing on the color and I was focused on the BTUs, the issue is we're different segments. And therefore, it goes back to which customer are you dealing with and what are they focusing on? And when we now talk about the theme of this masterclass, if you like, is that Lorraine is now anchored on the fact that you can have different color radiators. And I'm more anchored on the fact about, well, what's the output of this radiator? So again, the key message is around understanding what's the thing that in the focusing effect that it's going to focus on. How do you get that anchor built in to that experience that you're having with that customer? And therefore, the theme is around, you know, clearly understanding your customer. Ryan, I've got some interesting facts for you around the number of 80,000.
I'm happy to sit at your feet and learn your wisdom, Colin. What are these facts?
Did you know that 80,000 kilometers is the circumference of the Earth?
As far as you know, I did know that. Did you know, Colin, that 80,000 is roughly the population of Livermore, California, home of the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory Science Center?
No, I didn't. What's more incredible, Ryan, is 80,000 people is the number of people who have subscribed to the LinkedIn newsletter, Why Customers Buy, that I write every week.
Colin, if you were able to get all of your readers together, you could form your own city.
I could. And if we put them end to end, they may even go around the circumference of the Earth.
If they were all 1 kilometer tall, that is true.
So if you'd like to join the other 80,000 people who enjoy the Why Customers Buy newsletter each week, then simply go to LinkedIn, look up my name, and you'll see the newsletter there. We look forward to seeing you every week.
The availability heuristic is another one. This is, again, goes back to kind of the early days of behavioral economics. This is one of the foundational heuristics. And the basic idea here is that, I know we're trying to keep this simple, but there's this word that I love, Colin, metacognition, thinking about thinking.
Okay.
And the idea here is that sometimes we use feedback from our own brain, from our own process of thinking, and use that as information. So the availability heuristic essentially says, if it's hard for you to remember examples of something, or if it's hard for you to imagine something happening, you will estimate its likelihood as being less. And we could see how that might generally kind of be true as a fast and frugal way to go. It's also very easy to see how it can go wrong. So one prominent example is there was a period of time from the 1990s through the early mid-2000s where crime rates in the United States dropped precipitously. The murder rate fell by like half. It was just amazing. And yet if you asked Americans how they felt about crime, a lot of them would say that they were living in more dangerous times than they ever had before. Right. And a lot of people think that that was because as crime rates were going down, the way people were consuming information about crime was changing. The rise of cable news and the rise of internet news, we were surrounded by information about crime all the time because news was just so much more ubiquitous. And so that information became more available, and therefore we thought it was much more likely, even though objectively it was less likely, and less likely by a lot.
It's a bit like COVID.
Yeah.
Obviously, during the pandemic, it was on the news every night. It's no longer on the news every night. But actually, the rate of COVID is actually still obviously quite high, you know, and wanes up and down, but people don't really think about it anymore.
Yeah. So during the height of the pandemic, people were probably overestimating the danger of COVID. Again, it was still very dangerous. It was still very around. But because it was just around us all the time and it was all anybody was talking about, we probably estimated its severity as even more than it was. Well, again, it was something. Now, because people are talking about it much less, it occupies less mental space, we are probably underestimating some of the risks of COVID.
Sure, sure.
So that's okay. Availability. And then the last one we'll talk about is representativeness. The idea here is that a lot of times we will estimate the likelihood of something or also estimate whether something belongs to a certain category or class based on how much it seems like it should be. So if you were to ask somebody looking at me for the first time, like what's the likelihood that that person is a professor? The way that person would answer that question is probably based on how much I look like a stereotypical professor to them, right? And they'll say, oh, very likely, or not likely at all. Like I doesn't look like he can afford to buy anything other than the raggedy sweatshirt that he's wearing. He doesn't seem like a professor.
It's the jacket with the leather patches and the pipe and stuff like that.
Then the likelihood would go up dramatically.
Right. And for me, as I started to think about this, what this does is this starts to make you go, what areas are you going to focus on? So as I start to think about each of these, if you think about the anchoring effect, effectively, the first thing you say is going to be anchored. And it made me think of the famous phrase of first impressions are lasting impressions. Why? Well, because you're anchoring it on that. So I guess it made, and then made me think that, is this what you want to anchor your customer on? Have you thought of the implications of anchoring your customer on this? So if you're saying something is $99 and it's going to end up being $500, there's a balance between attracting them and disappointing them. Mm-hmm. And then if you looked at the focusing effect, it's going, well, which area is important to the customer? Yeah. And therefore, understanding which area is important to the customer and how are you going to anchor them onto it and what information are they getting through the other heuristics that are going to lead them on to making decisions about that. So what is going to be representative? What is going to be information they're getting from that availability heuristic, etc.? And that understanding all those things is important when designing an experience.
That's great. Let me suggest two ways that people can use the information that we covered today. So one way is to learn more about each of these effects. I think we've done at least one episode on each of these heuristics, and I'm pretty sure we've covered a couple of them more than once. And there's lots of books. I'm sure each of these has its own Wikipedia page. You could learn more about each of these effects, each of these heuristics, and that would be one way forward. Another way, and I think the purpose of these masterclasses is we've identified several different, in this case, heuristics. Is there a general theme between them? Can we use that theme to make some decisions about customer experience? So thematically, for me, all of these point to the idea that people are looking for information shortcuts. We're looking for ways to not have to evaluate everything, to not have to do hard math, to not have to make trade-offs between attributes. I think that's the core important understanding about humans that we can then draw and use in designing our customer experience and making things better for our customers. So if you're trying to sell something to someone and they are not super motivated by whatever it is you're selling, presenting them with a spreadsheet of information, showing them all the ways that your product is superior to better products, is probably not going to be as compelling as something like having a better design. Because objectively, you could be right. Objectively, you could have the better mousetrap, but that's not the way people evaluate things. People are looking for these shortcuts, especially for stuff that they don't care that much about.
Yeah, and I think the example of the radiator is a good one in the sense of I'm looking at BTUs, Lorraine's looking at color.
Yeah.
And therefore, by definition, we're in different segments. I'm not saying one's more important than the other, but the question becomes, where are your customers and what are they looking for?
Exactly. Okay?
And understanding that. And again, understanding even if you start to think about things like the BTUs, and a couple of the websites I have to say that I looked at did tell me about this. What is it and what does it mean? Explaining it to the understanding where your customer is effectively. Okay. You know, in terms of their level of understanding, I think is an important part of it. But the segmentation issue is the key one for me.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So in almost anything that you're selling, it's not the case that everybody's going to simplify this decision in the same way, right? So an important part of your segmentation should be figuring out for your segment, how are they making decisions? Like, what are the attributes that are important to them? You and Lorraine were both using simplifying heuristics, right? Yours was around a number, hers was around aesthetic, but it's a very similar simplifying process. It's your job as a marketer, it's your job as a customer experience professional to figure out, can I influence, can I anticipate what is the simplifying strategy customers in this segment are likely to use so that I can serve them better by doing that?
And the challenge, as always, is there's a difference between what customers say that they're looking for, what they're actually looking for, and what they're doing. And therefore, I would, as I always advise, look at what customers are doing. Don't look at what they're saying. I mean, I'm not saying don't look at what they're saying, but take it with, to a certain extent, with a pinch of salt. Because it's interesting, again, as I reflect back on my radiator experience.
This is really a life-changing radiator for you, Colin.
It was. Yeah. It's an incredible radiator. Cost wasn't an issue, or it was an issue, but it wasn't the most important issue. The anchor, the focus is, does it give out enough heat? And what does it fit into the new design of the kitchen, basically? Those were the key points. If the company had have asked me, I would have probably said price was going to be one of the key factors. Yeah. Okay, any other key points that we want to run through on what to do before we tell them what we're doing next week?
The general theme of simplification in a way that facilitates your customer goals will serve you better than diving deep on any particular heuristic, because these heuristics are very important from the perspective of understanding people and developing theories about the mind. But if you go out there with the idea, like, I'm going to use anchoring and adjusting every time I think about my customer.
Yes.
That's anchoring and adjustment's super important, but it's also well-defined within a specific sphere. If you go out with the idea that, like, I need to know what's important to my customer so I can make it super easy for them to make decisions in ways that are consistent with what's important to them, that's going to be a much better use of your brain.
I always remember back in the day when I was learning about body language, I was taught that, you know, when you see somebody fold their arms, then it can mean that they're being defensive. And the danger is that everybody that folded their arms from that moment forward, I thought, oh, they've been defensive.
Exactly.
And obviously some people were, but actually it's important that you take all of these things in a context. And the thing I was always taught with body language was never to take one thing as the, you know, the defining, this is what that person's feeling like. You have to treat it like, as opposed to an individual word, treat it like a sentence and look for different clues that are coming up. And that's the same concept of what we're talking about here. So we hope that's of use. The second one of these we're going to do next week, we're going to be talking about my favorite topic, which is memory and the importance of memory. So we look forward to talking to you either next week or the week after. We're not running these every time. Talk to you soon on memory. Thanks very much, everybody. Cheers. Thanks very much for listening to the show today. We really hope you've enjoyed it. And if you have, it would be really great if you could leave us a review.
This has been The Intuitive Customer with Colin Shaw and Professor Ryan Hamilton. But it doesn't end here. Just go to beyondphilosophy.com/podcast to find all of our shows, access free tools and resources, and subscribe, won't you? That way you'll never miss a show. That's beyondphilosophy.com/podcasts. We look forward to talking with you next time on The Intuitive Customer.